Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Daled Amud Bet. The Gemara, four lines from the bottom, is about to discuss Nazir Olam. We already discussed the Nazir Shimshon in yesterday's daf. Today we're going to discuss the Nazir Olam. Gemara says, V'Nazir Olam, Heicha Ktiv. Where is the source for Nazir Olam? Now the Gemara is not asking the source for a Nazir Olam. What is a Nazir Olam? But rather the source for the fact that a Nazir Olam is allowed to cut his hair in intervals of some sort. Tanya, we have a braita. Rabbi Omer, Avshalom Nazir Olam Haya. We know that Avshalom was a Nazir Olam. Shneemar, Vahi Miketz Arbaim Shana, Vayomer Avshalom El HaMelech, Elchana V'Shalem Et Nidari, Asher Nadarti L'Hashem B'Chevron. U'migaleach Echad L'Shneem Asar Chodesh. And he cut his hair every 12 months. Shneemar, Vayiketz Meyamim L'Yamim. Now, what Rabbi is referring to are two pieces of stories that are found in Shmuel Bet, one in Perek Yudalid and one in Perek Tedvav. In the description of Avshalom, it says, Uch Avshalom laya ish yafeh b'chol Yisrael lahalel me'od. There was no more handsome, beautiful than Avshalom. Mikaf raglo v'ad kad kodo lo yabo mum. He was perfect from his heels to his head. U'bigalcho et rosho. So when he used to cut his hair, V'ayam miketz yamim liyamim, which is here being quoted by Rabbi, asher yigaleach, when he would cut it, ki chaved alav, v'gilcho, because it got heavy for him, and therefore he would remove it. V'shakal et arusho, he used to weigh his hair, matayim shkalim be'eben amelech, it came out to this weight. V'yveldu lo Avshalom shlosha banim, u'bat achat, u'shmatamar, hi hayta isha, yifat mareh. So here we have a description of Avshalom. In the subsequent perek, in the perek Tedvav, where there's a description of a beginning of Mered Avshalom, the rebellion of Avshalom, it begins like this, Vehi miketz arba'im shana, at the end of the 40 years, Vayomer Avshalom el HaMelech, Elchana v'shalem et nidari, asher nadati l'Hashem b'Chevron, going to fulfill my obligations, the neder that I took in Chevron. Ki neder nadar abdecha b'shifti, b'gshur baram le'mor. When he was banished, after the killing of Amnon, he was banished, he went back to his grandfather's house in Geshur, because David marries Ma'acha, who gives birth to Avshalom and Tamar. So he goes back to his grandfather's house and stays in Geshur. Im Yashov Yeshiveni Hashem Yerushalayim, Vavati et Hashem. Hashem brings me back to Yerushalayim, then I will service him. Vayom HaMelech Lech B'Shalom, Vayakam Vayelech Chevrona. He's going to Chevron. So now Rabbi connects the two items and says that the shaving of his head and the cutting of his hair that was done in order to lighten the burden, and the story by the beginning of Mered Avshalom, where it says here that he had a neder, which he had to fulfill and give back to Hashem, he connects those two items and says that the reason that he had the neder was a neder nizirut, and the neder nizirut was a nazir olam because of the focus on hair, and the hair that he cut was once every 12 months. So from those two pieces of stories, independent stories, independent items, Rabbi brings them together to say that Avshalom was a Nazir Olam, and that he was cutting his hair every interval, which he's going to say is 12 months, and that he brought Korbanot, the Neder, or the Nedari, Asher Nadarti, that he's going to go bring in Chevron, or the Korbanot that are associated with cutting his hair. So that's what the Gemara here brings from the Braita. The Rabbi says that Avshalom was a Nazir Olam, and through Avshalom, we understand that this was the case, that the cutting of the hair is done every 12 months. As Tosafot says over here, V'stam neder, mashmalei nizirut. What neder would it be besides that of a nizirut? I'm sure you can think of other nidarim. Generally, neder in that case would mean the promise to bring korbanot, to thank Hashem for that which transpired. We have that in Yonah. In Yonah, when the ship is in danger, the people on the ship commit to bring korbanot to Hashem, that they're going to bring korbanot, and the same is probably true here by Avshalom. Over here he is making up part of the story because it's the beginning of the merit of Avshalom. But even if it was true, the idea would be that when Hashem brings me salvation, then I will thank Hashem by bringing korbanot or offering things to Hashem. Rabbi connects that still back to the previous perek where Avshalom on a regular basis was cutting his hair and says the two are connected. And therefore, he was migaleach et dechad de shnei masar chodesh, Shenemar, because the interval in which it says that he cut his hair is, Vehi miketz yamim li yamim. Veyalif, yamim, yamim, mivatei arei chuma. How do you know what the duration of yamim, yamim is? It's from batei arei chuma, by which you have yamim tiye gedulato. You're only allowed to redeem it within the first year of sale. After that, it becomes, the smitut becomes a permanent sale. So Rabbi says that the gzer shavar of yamim yamim tells me mahatam yud bet chodesh, just like by the sale of a house in a walled city, it's 12 months. Afkan yud bet chodesh, so too over here by Amshalom, it is 12 months. Rabbi Noharai omer, migaleach achad lamed yom. He cuts his hair every 30 days in a zero lam. Rabbi Yossi omer, migaleach me'arv shabbat, erev shabbat. Weekly, he cuts his hair. What's very interesting within the Mifaresh, and we saw this yesterday, that the Mifaresh thinks that the proper interval for cutting one's hair in a nazir olam is 30 days. Therefore, the Mifaresh over here goes out of his way to explain why the other two opinions exist, and maybe why they're not the halacha. And he says over here with regards to Abshalom, how come then, if it's true that you cut your hair every 30 days, why was Abshalom then cutting his hair every 12 months? So he says it has to do with the strength of the individual. The stronger the individual is, the more hair he can carry around. And since Abshalom was a gibor, he could carry that extra hair for 12 months. But a normal person would only be able to carry it around for 30 days. And therefore the interval for a Nazir Olam would be 30 days. And he does the same later on with regards to Me'erev Shabbat Le'erev Shabbat, because it says over here, Shekein Matzinu B'Bnei Melachim. Because we find that princes, Shemigalchim, Erev Shabbat, Erev Shabbat, that they cut their hair weekly. Whereas the king cuts his hair every day, the princes cut their hair weekly. So therefore, he says over here again, that for the prince, already a week is considered to be a gidul or something that is excessive. And that's why he cut it then. But for a normal person, it would be 30 days. So again, Mifaresh goes out of his way to maintain this idea that 30 days is the real interval. And here they're really just arguing about Avshalom. On the other hand, you could, unlike the Mefaresh, explain here that the intervals that are being given are not just for Avshalom, but these are the intervals based on what we see from Avshalom where everybody would practice this way. That's what's considered to be an interval where one would cut their hair. Obviously, you see the durations that are mentioned here are 7 days, 30 days, and 12 months. Those are periods of time that we know from the cycles of life, both in Avelut as well as in marriage. In Avelut, you have Shiva, Shlushim, and Shnei Masar Chodesh. And the same is true by marriage. You have Sheva Brachot, right? You have the Chodesh HaRishon. We're going to read in this week's Parsha with regards to the Isha Yifat Toar. And you also have the 12 months, the Shana Rishona, of marriage. So these are intervals that are considered to be normal cycle intervals. And so to over here, you're talking about what is the proper cycle or interval for a person to cut their hair. And the reason the Mifaresh might focus on 30 days, and the reason that maybe a person who is an Avel can't cut his hair for the 30 days is because that's the normal period of time in which someone would cut their hair. So therefore, in order for you to be established as someone who is an Avel, or someone who is different than normal, you'd have to not cut your hair for the 30 days, because then you start to look unkempt, or it's clear that you're not cutting the hair makes you different than other individuals. And that's why the 30-day interval might be important, both in terms of cutting hair for Avelut as well as for Nazir Olam. And that's why the Mifaresh might focus so much on this 30-day interval, because that's the normal time period in which person gets their hair cut every month or so. So now the Gemara says, my time was the Rabbi. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi's position? Yalif mi batei arei chuma. He learns out of the sale of a house in a walled city. Rabbi Hu damar, ein yamim chutin mishnayim. When it says yamim, it means a minimum of 2 days. That teaches you that the individual who sells the house within the walled city may not redeem his house before the elapsement of 2 days. So he has a minimum of 2 days to wait, and he has a maximum of a year. But then, if that's the case, over here, how do we know that the gzer shava of yamim yamim teaches you the 1 year? Maybe it teaches you the 2 days. So, hi, gzer shava mishum kovid gamir. Let's not forget that there has to be some sort of logic here. And the logic behind it is based on the fact that yamim yamim that is mentioned by Avshalom mentions kovid, weight, or excessiveness. Mishne Yamim, Leka Kovet. And over 2 days, there's no way that one can say that 2 days worth of not cutting one's hair leads to excessive hair or COVID that he would have to lighten his head. So therefore, that's an untenable explanation of Yamim. And that's why Rabbi opted for Yamim to mean a year rather than 2 days. Ve'ema bet shanim. Why don't we say it means 2 years? Tichtiv. Vehi miketz shnatayim yamim. So then when it comes to Yosef, when he's in the Beit HaSurim, it says that it comes at the end of 2 years. There the word yamim is used in the context of meaning 2 years. So when it says, danim yamim, she'enem ahim shanim, miyamim, she'enem ahim shanim. Over there is a qualifying piece to the statement, which is shnatayim yamim. Over here, by Avshalom, as well as by Te'arei Chumah, uses the word yamim without any qualifier. We'd rather have the Gzer Shova match up where there's no qualifier than the case where there is a qualifier. Why don't we say it means 30 days? Ad Chodesh Yamim. Again, the term Yamim is used in the context of Chodesh. Here it's by the Slav that Hashem's going to provide them for Ad Chodesh Yamim up to 30 days. Danim Yamim, Sheinim Mayim Chodeshim, Miyamim, Sheinim Mayim Chodeshim, same answer again. Where we're going to use the word yamim, where there is no qualifier, like months that is associated with it. And we won't prove it from the pasuk that has chodesh qualifying the word yamim. Why don't we learn it out from here? Miyamim yamima. So why don't we learn it out from there, from time to time? Now over there it's talking about the daughter of Yiftach, that Yiftach makes a neder when he goes out to battle, that when he returns from the battle, that which greets him and comes out of his house first will be Mukrav Lashem. And unfortunately, when he returns back from the battle, the first one to come out of the house to greet him is his daughter. And therefore, she is put into isolation. And it says over there that the young maidens used to go visit her, Miyamim Yamima. They used to visit her on regular intervals. Gemara says, Danim Yamim Miyamim, Ve'inyanim yamim miyamima. The drush over there is again trying to match up the words in their best form, which is yamim yamim versus yamim yamima, which we'll see a slightly different variation of the term. Umay nafkamino. What's the difference? V'ha tana debei Rabbi Shema. As the Gemara quotes every time it's looking at Gzeira Shava, and the Gemara doesn't get the exact word in the Gzeira Shava, it always quotes this tana debei Rabbi Shema. Tana debei Rabbi Shema is found by Tzarat. And over there is a drusha or a gzeir shava of v'shava kohen u'ba'a kohen. Zohi shiva, zohi biya. That the kohen will return and the kohen will come. And there, the limud is that the same way that when the kohen comes, there's certain activities that he undertakes, so too when the kohen returns, those same activities will be undertaken. And the gzeir shava is from the word va and shav. So even though over there, clearly not the same word, even though they have a similar meaning, which is that the kohen is coming to visit the person who is now michutz l'machaneh. Over here it's talking about the bayit, where we're talking about the house, and what you have to do to the house that a neged tzaraat is found in. So here the Gemara learns from Uval kohen v'shava kohen, that each time that he comes, that he has to then remove the stone, and then they have to replaster the area and fix up the area. Hani mili, echadaleka de domile. That's because in that case, we don't have any alternative. So therefore, when we have something that is similar, we'd rather learn something that's similar rather than something that is not similar. In a case, we have no choice, or in the case of Tzarat, and over there, not only is there no similar word to make the Gzer Shava with, but also over there, it focuses on meaning, which is that Meshava Kohen or Baal Kohen, the Torah uses two different terminologies for what similarly is an appearance of the Kohen in the location. So the Gzer Shava is really coming out of the Kohen's performance of the same activity, which is coming to look at the Tzarat. So that's part of the Gzer Shava that you can't ignore, but it's not based on the exactness of the words. Gemara says that it's only true when we have no alternative. When you have an alternative, we'd rather opt for the alternative. Now, when the Gemara brought the case from the daughter of Yiftach, over there, the Gemara says, why don't we say that it means Yamim Yamima? Over there, what does Yamim Yamima mean in context of over here? The suggestion is that they used to go visit her 4 times a year. So if they went to visit her 4 times a year, the Gemara's assumption is that it was done at regular intervals, and that means that it would mean every 3 months. So that was the Gemara suggestion. The Gemara rejected it because the word Yamima versus Yamim. Now the Gemara rejects it for a different reason. How do you know that they went every 3 months? Chazimna, one time. How do you know that those 4 times were regular intervals? Dilma, arba'a zimne bishata. Maybe they went 4 times a year. And arba'a yarchin chazamna, zimna. They used to wait 4 months, go once. Train yarchin chazimna. And then 2 months, and then go again. And then either 2 months and go again, and then 4 months interval, or 4 months again, 2 months. How do you know that the intervals were equal, and that when they went 4 times, they would have gone at these 3 month intervals? That would also cause a problem, because then you can't really learn anything from the Dor of Yiftach, because the unevenness of the intervals then would not teach you anything about what this duration, what the time of Yamim means. And also, just whether that makes sense or not, if you think about the Shlosh V'Galim, if you look about the 3 times that one has to be Ola the Regel, they're not at regular intervals. And the truth is that they are 6 months of the year where you do all the Aliyah the Regel, and there are another 6 months of the year where you do no Aliyah the Regel, obviously connected to the seasons. That the Aliyah the Regel is from the spring until the end of the harvest, basically over the summer period or the drier period. And during the rainy season, one does not make that pilgrimage. And the same might be true here with the daughter of Yiftach, that the time periods for their visits were not necessarily at regular intervals, but rather when it was convenient or easier to visit her. And that might have been skewed towards the summer period rather than the winter period. Now, as regards to the daughter of Yiftach, just as a sidebar over here, it's interesting that the Gemara brings an example or tries to bring a proof from her, because the Ibn Ezra says that the dedication that Yiftach made was whatever exited his house. That means that if it was an animal, it would be an Olah Hashem, it would bring a Korban Hashem. Or if it was a human being or some object that was not Mukrav al Mizbeach, then it would be dedicated to Hashem. So if you're talking about objects or inanimate objects, you can talk about their monetary value going to Hashem. You can talk about korbanot, if they are ro'oi the korbanot. With people, what does it mean to be dedicated to Hashem? So the Ibn Ezra claims, basically, that he dedicated her to be a hermit or a nizira l'Hashem. That he dedicated her to then take up a life of both chastity as well as kedusha, and that she was almost like a monk or a nun that isolate themselves and then dedicate their lives to Hashem. And that's the way the Ibn Ezra explains what happened with the daughter of Yiftach. That would give added meaning to the fact that the Gemara over here wants to learn from the daughter of Yiftach to what the duration of Avshalom was. Because then, according to the Ibn Ezra, the daughter of Yiftach was actually somewhat akin to a Nazira, Nizira. And it would make sense then to bring that as a proof. Just so you know, it's worth seeing the Ramban, that's the last Ramban, Ala Torah, on Sefer Vayikra. The Ramban, within his Perush on Chumash, many times deviates a little bit and goes off to explain things in Nach and Navi. And so he has his parts of his Perush on Chumash also include commentary on the Navi. That last Ramban Ala Torah in Sefer Vayikra discusses this issue of the daughter of Yiftach, and he takes the Ibn Ezra to task, and he says that that is absolutely not what it means to be dedicated to Hashem. By the way, it's very interesting because it might be almost a hashkafic difference in their view. He says, where's an example of someone who's dedicated to Hashem? We find that by Chana, when she dedicates Shmuel to Hashem. What's the process by which one was dedicated by Hashem? Yeshev Beit Hashem Kol Yimei Chayav. He stays in the house of Hashem for the remainder of his life, or basically becomes of service to the people, or of service to Hashem. So rather than being isolated or a hermit that is dedicated to Hashem, on the other hand, the Ramban views being dedicated to Hashem as someone who serves in the Beit Hashem. Someone who serves Hashem but is also interacting with the people still, and someone who's still amongst civilization. And therefore he views this idea of the Ibn Ezra as being completely incorrect. And he says that Yiftach made a mistake, and his interpretation of the word Chayrem, which is the Ramban's interpretation there of Chayrem, was a mistake that he had to dedicate his daughter in this manner or put her out to pasture in that way. But interesting, just as a sidebar, because it might really, according to Ibn Ezra, have relevance to our sugya in terms of using the daughter of Yiftach as an example in this case. So first of all, we'll see later on in the Masechta that a father does have that right with their child. That's number one. Number two is the Ramban basically says what you're saying is that he didn't have that right. Maybe the Sanhedrin, maybe the king has a right to do something. Yiftach did not have that right to do it to his daughter. And that's what the Ramban says was the mistake. That Yiftach thought he had that power, and he really was not empowered to impose that upon his daughter. All right, so now the Gemara continues and says, Rabbi Norai Omer, Migaleach Echad L'Shloshim Yom. That he cuts the hair every 30 days. My taima. What's the reasoning behind his 30-day interval? Gabe Kohanim Mishum De'ika Kovet. Because by the Kohanim, they have to cut their hair every 30 days. We saw that Gezer Shav already of Pera from the Pasuk in Yechezkel to the Nazir, which is now funny because what ends up happening now is how do you know that a Kohen has to cut his hair every 30 days? From Nazir. And now what are you doing? You're taking that Kohen and learning back to Nazir Olam. So the Mefarshim ask over here, why don't you just do it directly? Just learn out from a regular Nazir to a Nazir Olam. So the Gemara says, Achanami Ika Kovet. So also over here, just like by a Kohen, 30 days is considered to be the interval in which hair is not overgrown and it's not too heavy and you're allowed to remove it. So too, by the Nazir Olam, that would be considered to be the normal interval. And then Tosfot says, Shim Tomar, HaKohanim Atzmam Yalfinan Mistam Nazirut. Im Kain, Nelif Nazir Olam Mistam Nazir. Tehavish Shloshim Yom. Just learn Nazir Olam from Mistam Nazir and you won't have to go through this convoluted process here. Ve'esh Lamar, Telo Mistavar Le'li Mod Kedushat Olam Mikdushat Sha'a. That they don't want to learn out something that's Kedushat Olam Kedushat Sha'a. The Rosh formulates it even, I think, a little more sharper, which is that when it comes to a Nazir Stam, the cutting of his hair comes at the termination of his Nazirut. So his Nazirut ends, therefore he cuts his hair. By a Nazir Olam, when he cuts his hair, it does not change his status as a Nazir. He remains a Nazir even after he's cut his hair. So if you're looking for a paradigm that has a similar typology to it, Nazir Stam is not that case. Because Nazir Stam is a Nazir who's terminating his Nazirut and cuts his hair. Where's an example of someone who cuts his hair but remains in his Kedusha? That's a Kohen. A Kohen is cutting his hair every 30 days, but after the cutting the hair, the Kedusha is still there. So the parallel to Kohen makes a lot of sense versus the parallel to Stam Nazir. The truth is, you're right, that by a Kohen, there is no Pasuk actually in the Torah that indicates that he may not grow out his hair. It's really a Pasuk in Yechezkel that says, Pera lo yishalechu, that they're not allowed to overgrow their hair. But based on that, we know what is considered to be too much. And that's what the Rabbi Kiv Eger says over here, that he thinks that it's obvious why it made sense to go through Kohen, is because Kohen is defining for us the duration at which it becomes overgrown. And Nazir Stam doesn't give you that information. The Kohen being interposed between Nazir Stam and Nazir Olam helps us to understand what is that interval where it becomes overgrown. Once you know that interval, now you can apply it to Nazir Olam, and it makes sense to use Kohen rather than go to Nazir Stam. Nazir Stam doesn't give you that information as to when something is considered to be overgrown. Although you could argue, again, the reason that Nazir Stam, which we're going to see in a second why it is 30 days, is because of that idea. That one is only considered to be growing out their hair, like by Avelut, once 30 days have elapsed and the person hasn't cut his hair. Otherwise, less than 30 days is not considered to be growth of hair. That's considered to be a normal interval in which one would grow their hair. Just over 2 weeks, you can't tell if a person's growing out his hair or this is just the normal interval in which he gets his hair cut. So you need the 30 days minimum to get there. So then you could argue on this from Akiva Eger and say that even within an Nazir Stam, 30 days is significant because it shows growth of hair. Right, and remember, their day wasn't just cutting their hair, it was cutting their beards, trimming, or putting their beards into a good shape. Over 30 days, a person, once they've got an haircut, they look clean, kempt. Same thing with their beard. It's in a nice, well-kept way. After 30 days, everything starts to become a little wilder, and therefore, that was considered to be the normal interval. Now, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Migaleach Merev Shabbat Erev Shabbat. He cuts weekly. Ma'ika Beinei L'Shar Achohi. At that point, what's the difference between him and everyone else? Of course, between everyone else does it 30 days. But between him and the other princes. If he's cutting weekly, and the other princes are cutting weekly, there's nothing here that talks about COVID in terms of his waiting the 30 days. Now, Tosafot and the Rosh over here ask, wait a minute, what's the difference between them? I can give you a number of differences between them, and we'll discuss that in a second. But the Gemara here says, Yom Tov, Shechal Yot, Emsa Shabbat. The difference between them is when Yom Tov falls out in the middle of the week. Dochli migalchin, hulo migaleach. That everybody gets a haircut, takes a shave for Yom Tov or Erev Yom Tov. That's what many of the dinim, when we deal with in Moed Katan, why one is not allowed to cut the hair during the Moed and to shave during the Moed is to compel you to do it beforehand. Because that makes a person in their most presentable state. Whenever you get a haircut and you get a beard trim before Yom Tov, this individual, if he only is allowed to cut weekly, then if Yom Tov falls out in the middle of the week, everybody else is getting their haircut in the middle of the week, he won't be able to get it between him. Inami, the gluche min safra, demale shabto, and it has to do with when he gets the haircut on that weekly basis. Achli migalchin, and his brethren, his princes, they do their haircuts in the morning on Friday. Iulo migaleach ad panyo. He doesn't do his haircut until later in the day, till the afternoon. By the way, that might somewhat akin to avelut. When we say that a person stops the avelut, whether it's because of Yom Tov or stops the avelut because of Shabbat, we don't stop that in the morning coming into Shabbat or Yom Tov. We wait till Mincha after Chatzot, but really after Mincha, once we've entered into the area of Mincha Ketana, and in that area, then we tell the person, you're already within the sphere or complete sphere of Shabbat or Yom Tov, and then we allow the person to deal with those issues of avelut. Similar over here. It's weekly, he has to wait until the afternoon, he can't just do it in the morning. The morning would be for Kavod Shabbat, and the morning would be for Kavod Yom Tov, but he doesn't have that right. Now, here I said before that the Rishonim point out that there's a big difference between them, which is Im Tamar, B'nei Ma'ika D'Einayu Korbanot. The difference between him and the other princes is the other princes cut their hair, and then they go back home. Over here, Avshalom, or the person who's a Nazir Olam, cuts his hair, and then has to bring the Korbanot associated with being a Nazir Olam. So there's a huge difference between them. So that's what Tosfot says. What's the difference between them within cutting their hair? We know there are other differences, the Korbanot, but in cutting hair, he doesn't look any different than anybody else, and that's what the Gemara is after over here. Or the way that the Rosh explains it over here, his brethren, the princes, can cut with scissors. Dafka bitar. That's what we saw before, Mekel bitar in yesterday's daf. I mentioned to you yesterday, it's not clear what Mekel bitar means. Is that akin to avelut, which Mekel bitar means you're just allowed to take off a little bit of the excess, or take off that which prevents you from functioning normally? Or does Mekel bitar mean that he can get a full haircut? Over here, the Rosh clearly says that Mekel bitar is not the same thing as getting a regular haircut, but misparayim. Dafka Mekel, behem yucholim legaleach hakol. And he's only allowed to take off the excess, whereas they are able to shave off their heads or do whatever they want. They can get a full-fledged haircut. He says, Ilu, bistam giluach shurgalim b'nei melachim legaleach, kaboya mai binayu. Vein darkam legaleach hakol, vegam b'misparayim. Says, well, with the princes, if they're getting their haircut every week, then on a weekly basis, first of all, you're not going to cut off everything. You're going to just be trimming because that's what you would do on a weekly basis, right? It's not enough growth to make it into a full-fledged haircut. And number two is you probably might not even use a misparayim. You might use a tar as well, or be mekil batar. So that's what he says. Maybe there's no difference over there. Then he notes also, velav dafka bepanya. He says, why does he have to wait till the afternoon? What's the difference between the morning and the afternoon that we're talking about Benazir? He says, ela telo megaleach adavat korbanotav. That might be the answer. The Rosh, as opposed to what Tosfot says, that the difference here, they're asking what's the difference in tiklachat, the answer of the Gemara about morning and afternoon might have to do with exactly that issue of the korbanot. They can do it in the morning because all they have to do is cut their hair. He has to do it in the afternoon because he can't just cut his hair. He also has to bring the korbanot. So he says, lav dafka panya delo migaleach adavat korbanotav. So that's what he says. The panya is a code word for there's a more involved process. It's not simply cutting your hair, which you just go in the morning and cut your hair. Panya means that there's much more to cutting your hair. You have to cut your hair, plus bring the korbanot, so that gets you into the afternoon. That takes up more time. So the Rosh sees that as being part of the Gemara's differentiation, versus Tosafot, who says, no, you know, the Gemara's after something else, just what about what's the galachat difference.
What about the issue of COVID?
Right, so we said before that the Mifaresh over here, who believes that Nazir Olam is every 30 days, over here explains why that was a COVID is because since he was a prince and they cut their hair weekly, then once it reaches that weekly duration, for him already, that's considered to be a COVID. So for his personal standing or stature, that was considered to be a COVID. But not that we would learn from there to others. The Faresh keeps saying that 30 days, everybody agrees 30 days for Nazir Olam. This is just a question with regards to Avshalom. And he explains the exception, whether it's a year or whether it's a week, that was exceptional for Avshalom. Whether it has to do with his strength or has to do with him being a prince, that's what makes it different. But otherwise, everybody else would wait 30 days because that's the normal interval for other people. Now the Gemara asks, with regards to the 40 years, Hani Arbaim Shana Mavitayu. What are these 40 deers doing over here? It says, Vayi Miketz Arbaim Shana. So now why would you delineate that the end of 40 years, and then all of a sudden, Merit of Shalom begins? That he's going to take his Nedarim in Chevron, and Merit of Shalom begins. What's the significance of those 40 years? Rabbi Norai Omer, Mishum Rabbi Yoshua, the Ketz Mem Shana, Shashalu Lahem Melech. It was after 40 years from which Bnei Yisrael had asked for a king. Tano Otah Shana, Shashalu Lahem Melech, Hi Shnat Eser Lishmuel Aramati. And we have a Brayta in Seder Olam that teaches us that the year that they asked for a king was the 10th year of Shmuel Aramati. Now this goes to a calculation that the Gemara does in Tmurah with regards to these 40 years. You should know that it's a very difficult calculation, mostly not because of the calculation itself, but because of the conflation by the Gemara of the kingship of Shaul and Shmuel. That Shmuel and Shaul, according to the Gemara, overlap heavily in their rulership, thereby leaving only Shaul ruled only for 2.5 years, according to the Gemara, which is very hard in the Pshat, in the Psukim, in Navi, and it seems that it doesn't make so much sense. But, given that that's the count of Seir Olam, the way to come about it, there are two ways to get to that count. It's so difficult to count, that even over here, the Mefaresh and Tosafot argue, which year of David's reign was this? According to the Mefaresh, it was the end of his 37th year of reign, whereas according to the Balei Tosafot, it was the beginning of his 36th year of his reign, in which this happened. Now, what everybody agrees is that this is not the end of the 40 years of David's reign, because David only rules for 40 years. And Merit of Shalom was not in the last year of David's life, because both we find in the Navi itself that other things happen afterwards. And whether necessarily the Navi is in order, that's a separate question. But the Gemara is unwilling to view this as being in the last year of David HaMelech's life. And therefore, the 40 years have to have significance outside of the rule of David. So what has significance? So now here you have a machloket between the Mefaresh over here and the other Rishonim as to what the significance of the 40 years is. Of course, to most of the Rishonim, the significance of the 40 years is that when Bnei Yisrael asked for a king, that was a mered against Hashem. That was a rebellion against the rulership of Hashem, or the kingdom, or the kingship of Hashem. And therefore, when it comes to Merit of Shalom, which is the first rebellion against the sitting king, so too over there, we connect the two items with this 40-year period. This is the rebellion by Avshalom against the king. That's the first rebellion since the last rebellion that we had against the kingship of Hashem when they asked for a king in the first place. That's how most Rishonim view it. On the other hand, the Mefaresh does something akin to the Gemara in Megillah and Daf Yud, Yud Aleph, where the Gemara over there tries to calculate the Shivim Shana, the 70 years of Galut Bavel, and shows over there that many of the kings of Bavel and Persia make a mistake about how to count the 70 years, and therefore they make mistakes about when the Geulah should be or whether Hashem is failing to bring Bnei Yisrael back. And similarly over here, he says the same thing about Avshalom. Avshalom knew that the kingdom of David would only last for 40 years, and therefore he leads his rebellion at the 40-year period, mistakenly thinking that the 40 years is not about David himself, but the 40 years is about Bnei Yisrael had a king. And so he makes that mistake in his calculation, and that's what causes him to lead the rebellion at the 40th year. Now, just for this sake of ease, the easiest way to figure out these numbers is that the way that Seder Olam Rabbah talks about it is that Shmuel is brought to Shiloh at the time that he is weaned by his mother. 3 years after he was born, he's brought up to the Mikdash by his mother. We know that Shmuel lives for 52 or so years. So now, if we take those 52 years, it would make sense, or it seems that Shmuel was the ruler of the Shofet during that period of time. But we also know that Eli ruled over Bnei Yisrael for 40 years. And so now, if Eli was the Shofet over Bnei Yisrael for 40 years, and Shmuel lives for 52 years, that means that he is there with Eli during that period of time. They overlap. We know that Eli is already there at the time that Chana comes up to the Mishkan Shiloh, and it was a year prior to the birth of Shmuel, because the next year is when Shmuel is born. So if Eli ruled for 40 years, that means that he overlaps with Shmuel's life, based on the fact that we assume that his rulership started when Chana comes up to the Mishkan Shiloh, that if you count 40 years from then, that overlaps 39 years with the life of Shmuel. That means that left over for Shmuel are 13 years. 13 years in which Shmuel exceeds that of Eli. Now, we also know that Shaul dies only 4 months after Shmuel. And the Gemara there says that Shaul rules for Shnatayim v'chetzi, for 2.5 years. And so you have over there, if you subtract out the extra 4 months that he lived beyond Shmuel in the 2.5 years, that leaves over 11 years, 10 of which belong to Shmuel HaRamati, and 1 year where he overlaps with Shaul. Because even though he had appointed Shaul, it doesn't become well known to a later date that Shaul is really the king. So now if you want to know when was Shaul appointed, or when did they ask for a king? That was at the tail end of the 10 years of Shmuel's rule. So then, if you do that, that means that Shaul only rules after that for 2.5 years. By the way, that's the very problematic part of Seder Olam. And 2.5 to 3.5 years of his rulership. And then, that would lead you, if you take 40 years from that date, plus into David HaMelech's rule, that would mean that David HaMelech ruled between 37 years. And this is taking place in the 36th to 37th year of David's rule. And that's what they're talking about, Vayim Miketz Arba'im Shana. Again, the calculation is not as so simple because of this conflation between Shmuel and Shaul's rule, as well as the fact that Chazal say that Shaul's rule was for such a short duration of 2.5 years, which seems very difficult given all the stories that we have in Shmuel Aleph with Shaul chasing David, and all the many stories that we have there, that they should only take place over a 2.5 year period, seems unlikely. But based on that, you have this Arba'im Shana, which the Gemara is explaining what the relevance of this Arba'im Shana is here in the context of Vayhi Miketz Arba'im Shana. Okay, now next Mishnah, very simple Mishnah, Shtam Nizirut Lamed Yom. Shtam Nizirut, if a person takes on a Neder Nizirut without specifying the duration of Nizirut, it lasts for 30 days. Mina Hane Mile. Where do we know this from? So Amar Rav Matna, Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, Kadosh Iyeh. Iyeh b'gematria tlatin habo. Iyeh in gematria is 30, so therefore it's 30 days. This cannot be the ikar of his limud, because gematria is not one of the ways that you're doresh the Torah to get a din. So you have to believe, that's what the Rishonim say over here, that this is an asmachta of the Almo, that this is just a asmachta, as the Rosh says. But gemora gemirila, v'smchua, ahach, gematria. This was a misora, that it was 30 days, but they just connected it to this gematria over here, or the yeah, but that's not the ikar limud. As the Rosh says over here, the lab mi gimimidosh, shatorin adreshabim. You say Rabbi Shmuel Omer every morning, and gematria is not one of the 13 ways in which the Torah is nidreshet. Barpada amar, keneged nazir nizro, omrim bitorah, lamed chaserachat. If you count the number of times that the word or the verb Nezer or Nazir appears in the Parsha, and as the Mifreish points out of here, it's not just Nezer and Nazir, but it's also Neder, the word Neder and Nidro that appears in that Parsha, it appears 29 times. To teach you that a Stam Nizirut is 29 days and not 30 days. Which obviously, if you're asking what the source for the Mishnah is, then that's going to be a problem, because Bar Pada is saying that it is 29 days. Now as the Mifreish points out, there are more than 29, there are actually 30 there. So he says, we don't count one of them, which is Nezer Elukav Lo Kochashiv. That doesn't count. The fish ain't a Lashon Nizirut. Because over there, it's not a Lashon Nizirut, a Lashon Atara. It's a Lashon of a crown, Komoshim in Targem. So therefore, he accepts that word. The other thing you could say is that you need one word, and this is generally to tell you the Ikar Din of Nazir, the word Nezer, and then everything else is excessive. That's why the 29 are considered to be excessive, and from that, we learn out that a Stam Nizirut is 29 days. For Rav Matan, Nami Nilef, Minazir Nizro. Why doesn't Rav Matan like Bar Pado's explanation? Amalacha, Ha'ul Drosha. We need the words Nazir and Ezir there for Drashot. Miyayim B'Sheikhar Yazir. Lesor Yein Mitzvah, Ki Yein Rishut. We saw that Drasha yesterday. Ki aflinin dor neder nazir lahazir. Melamed she nizirut chalal nizirut. That a person can take multiple nidrei nizirut. A person can say areni nazir, and then he'll be chayav to do two sequential chiyuvei nizirut. So all of these limudim come out of these words nazir. If that's the case, then how can you be doreshed at the number of times that the words appear, that gives you the 29 days, when we have other drashot from these words? And then the way that the Rishonim explain it is, well, if these words have drashot, then there must be other drashot as well for the other words. And the fact that we don't know those drashot are our deficit, not because there aren't drashot for the other words. So the assumption, the extrapolation from what Rav Matna says is that we have drashot for these words, and so too the other words have drashot, and we don't know those drashot. Or you could just simply see that what Rav Matna is saying is you can't use this as the source, because not all of those words of Nazir and Nazirut are available. If they're not all available, then how do you know which is the right number, or how do you come up with the number? It doesn't seem to be something that's well-defined or objective, and therefore you can't use that as your source. The other hand, Bar Padar Malacha, Lekechad Minon, Delav LeDrasha. There can't be one of them that's not excessive over here. It must be that at least one of them, you don't have a drasha for the word. And since it's in excess, that teaches us or sheds light on the other times that it's mentioned. So you're right, the other word, the word Nazir, is used for drashot. That doesn't preclude you from using it as part of a count to figure out what is the duration of a stam nizirut. And again, you could learn it from this concept of that a davar yatsa min aklal, and if something leaves the klal, lo lameda matzmo yatsa, lo lameda aklal klo yatsa. So this one word, when it's excessive, comes to teach you that you should count the words. So it teaches you about all those words that you should count them, not just about itself. And therefore, even though there are other drashot for these words, that doesn't mean that you can't use that as part of a count to get there. Ella, me'adahau l'minyana, kulhu nami l'minyana. Since this one or that excessive word is used towards a count, so to all the others, you can use them towards that count. Tznan, our Mishnah seems to be a big problem for Bar Pado, which is stam nizirut shloshim yom. A stam nizirut, the duration of a stam nizirut is 30 days. Bishlam al Rav Matna necha. According to Rav Matna, our Mishnah makes a lot of sense. Stam nizirut is 30 days, and that's what he says. Yeah, the Gematria tells you that 30 days, and that stam nizirut is 30 days. Ella Bar Pado akasha. What are you going to do with Bar Pado, who says it's 29 days, and our Mishnah is telling you that stam nizirut is 30 yom? Amalecha Bar Pado, I did the ike yom platin demigaleach umevi korbanotav. Since then, the 30th day, that's the day when he shaves his head and he brings his korbanot. That's why it writes shloshim. You're right. 30 days includes the process of tahara. He's 29 days, he's a nazir. And then on the 30th day, he goes through the process of tahara. So stam nizirut shloshim no means if you want to complete the entire process of nizirut, that takes 30 days. It's not 29 days. There's 29 days of nizirut, but there's an extra day in which the nazir is mitayer himself. Tznan, we have a Mishnah further on in Daf Tet Zayin. Mish amar, hareini nazir. Person says, I am a nazir. Megaleach, yom shloshim ve'achad. So now this undermines that answer that we just gave, and seemingly causes a big problem for Bar Pado. Because Bar Pado now explained that when you said stam nizirut means 30 days, that means 29 days of nizirut, and then the 30th day is in which you process the tahara. The Mishnah later on makes it clear that if a person takes on a neder nizirut, he shaves his head on the 31st day, and not on the 30th day. So that's clearly problematic for Bar Pado, because that indicates that the first 30 days are nizirut, and then the 31st day is when you do the process of tahara. So Bishlam al Rav Natna Necha. According to Rav Matna, that makes a lot of sense. 30 days of nizirut, and then the 31st day is the process of tahara. El Bar Pado Kasho. For Bar Pado, that's a problem, because then why is he doing it on the 31st day and not on the 30th day? Amar Lechar Bar Pado, Aim Seifa. Wait a minute. The latter half of that Mishnah is actually much more supportive of my position. Im Gileach LeYom Shloshim Yatsa. If by chance he happened to shave on the 30th day, he is Yotzei. Well, according to Rav Matna, how could it be that on the 30th day he shaves and everything is hunky-dory? He needs full 30 days of Nizirut, and then only on the 31st day. According to me, it makes a lot of sense, because I say there's only 29 days, and he has to shave on the 30th day. Ella, Seifa Misayile. The latter half of the mission is supportive of Bar Pado's position. Reisha. What are we going to do with the Reisha that is problematic for him? It's as if he says full days. Now, here it's very difficult. It's not clear what the Gemara means when it says Nasek Omer Shlemim, because he doesn't say Shlemim. Had he taken an Eden Nezirut of 30 days, then he would require a full 30 days duration, because he specifies 30 days. Here we're talking about Stam Nezirut, where he doesn't specify the amount. So everybody agrees, if he took an Eden Nezirut for 30 days, that he would have to wait out the full 30 days. So what he says over here is, Nasek Omer Shlemim. It's the equivalent of him saying 30 days. When he says Stam Nezirut, Mi Derabanan, this is what Bar Pada is suggesting, we make him wait 30 days because it's as if he took a neder for Shloshim days. So that, the idea being that the person might mistakenly think that just like Stam Nezirut is 29 days, that when he takes neder Nezirut for 30 days, it's also 29 days. So in order to prevent that problem, the Chachamim instituted that even though he's really only a Nazir for 29 days, when he takes a Stam Nezirut, they extended it one day and made him into a Nazir for 30 days. And then he would bring his Korbanot on the 31st day. The Rosh over here gives some explanation for why they would do such a thing and why that would happen. Avagav the Stam Nezirut Kaftet Yom, Gazru Chachamim Ben Shemar Haini Nazir Stam, Ben Shemar Haini Nazir Kaftet Yom, Shei Nazir Lamed Yom. So whether he says, I want to be a Nazir Stam, or whether he specifies that he wants to be a Nazir for 29 days, then he waits 30 days. Lefi shemina gazehu b'bnei adam. That's the way that people normally conduct themselves. A round number, number one, is 30. Normally, when you talk about a month, you talk about 30 days. By the way, that probably is much of this machloket here revolves around this issue of the duration of Nezirut having to be a period of time in which the hair grows out and the normal interval. The answer to that is probably a month. But months come in different forms. There's a month that's 29 days. There's a month that is 30 days. And it's very possible or very likely that the machloket here between Rav Matta and Bar Pada is reflective of that difference within the months, that they're arguing about whether it's 29 or 30 days. And then now you understand the Rosh's comment over here, which is that even though maybe he took a neder Nezirut Stam, which would be for 29 days, or even if he specifies 29 days, we make him wait 30 days because Chodesh, or that type of interval, most people or many people would associate with 30 days. So in order not to have that problem, we just make it 30 days all the time to be consistent, even though technically, according to Bar Pada, you could have a 29-day Nezirut if you specified or if you had a Stam Nezirut. Ula Rav Matna Kasha Seifa. What is Rav Matna going to do with the letter after Mishnah? Kazavar Miksat Hayom Kikulo. He believes that a portion of a day is considered to be like a full day. Now, this is going to be a big difference between him and Bar Pada, because if you really believe that Miksat Hayom Kikulo, why is it a proof from the Seifa to Bar Pada? The Seifa said that he's allowed to cut his hair on the 30th day. B'diavad. The Chatzil he should do it on the 31st day. B'diavad, he should do it on the 30th day. The answer that Rav Matna gives is Miksat Hayom Kikulo. Once he enters into a portion of the 30th day, technically he's completed his Nezirut, even though we'd rather he finishes out the full 30th day. Nevertheless, if he doesn't do it, he's Yotze B'diavad. So why for Rav Pada now is it a proof that you can shave yourself on the 30th day? The answer is Miksat Hayom Kikulo. The answer is Bar Pada doesn't hold the Miksat Hayom Kikulo. And therefore, if you're shaving on the 30th day, that means that you only kept 29 days of Nezirut. And that's why it's a proof to him. So the difference between them will be this idea, whether you count Miksat Hayom Kikulo or you do not count Miksat Hayom Kikulo. Now the Rishonim over here already asked, what is then the difference between Bar Pada and Rav Matna, l'alocha or l'alocha l'maaseh? Because in the end, Bar Pada agrees that you have to wait 30 days anyway, l'chatchila. B'diavad, if you did it on the 30th day, you're okay. And Rav Matna says the same thing, that you should wait 30 days, l'chatchila. And b'diavad, if you finish 29 and a half into the 30th day, then you can also bring your korbanot. So l'alocha l'maaseh, everybody agrees that you should be bringing your korbanot on the 31st day. And b'diavad, if you brought him on the 30th day, you're also yotze. What is the difference now between them? So here the Mifaresh brings two nafkaminot between them. It says, Ma'ika ben Rav Matna the Bar Pada, Ika to the Bar Pada, mi nitma biyom shloshim achar melot, Karin and Bey. What happens if he becomes tamei on the 30th day? Now if he becomes tamei on the 30th day, normally when a Nazir becomes tamei, that is oker his Nizirut, and he has to restart his whole process of Nizirut and recount the 30th days. But that depends. Has he completed his Nizirut, or has he not completed his Nizirut? If it's already after he's completed his Nizirut, the Tumah postpones his ability to bring the Korban Ol, but does not undermine his Nizirut. So here, if he becomes Tamei on day 30, for Rav Matna, that's during his Nizirut. And that means that he's going to be Oker his Nizirut, and he has to then start over. According to Bar Palda, where it's only an institution of Chachamim to wait the extra day, that Tumah happened when he's already completed his Nimbalot, his full Nizirut, and he would not Shuv Enes Soteret Nidro. It would not undermine his Neder. Rav Matna Damar, any kind of Nizirut Pachot Mishloshim Yom, Toch Malot, Queen and Blades, within that period of time. If you believe that's true, that actually would shed light on the din of Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo, which is a general Chakira within Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo. When we say that a portion of a day is considered to be the full day, what does that mean? Does that mean that Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo is that we allow you to do Mitzvot Hayom instead of Kekulo? And therefore, if you so choose to do Kulo, we would allow you to do Kulo. Mitzvot Hayom just gives you the option to terminate something early because Mitzvot Hayom is Kekulo. Or, when do we say Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo, do we say that it's over? Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo means that the day is finished. Anything you do afterwards is considered to be excessive or unnecessary or improper. For instance, by Avelut. When we say that the last day of Avelut, we say Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo, also by the first day of Avelut, we're making on both sides. But the last day when we say Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo, what happens if a person chooses to continue the Avelut through the remainder of that day? Is that permissible? When we say Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo, does that mean that you have the option to take up that Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo? If you don't choose to do it, you can do the day itself and be in Avel the whole day. Or do we say when Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo, it's as if that day now is over, and if you were to keep Avelut past that point in time, it would be meaningless. It's not Avelut. So that would be the question over here. The way that the Mefarash is explaining Rav Matna, when he says Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo, you're still considered to be in your Nizirut, even though Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo. That means that it's as if it continues. Mitzvot Hayom is an option out, but it doesn't change the fact that that last day is still part of your Nizirut. If you came Tamei there, it would undermine your Nizirut. The other Nafkamina, Inami Anu Dikman Ayushim Amar Eni Nazir Kaftet Yom. He says, I'm going to be a Nazir for 29 days. Unlike what the Rosh says. The Rosh says that even Bar Poda agrees that when you say I'm 29 days, you still have to keep 30 days. Many of the other Rishonim believe that's not true. It's only if he says Nazir Stam, does Bar Poda say that we make you keep 30 days, because that's the normal interval, or that people will make a mistake about it. But if you specify 29 days, according to Bar Poda, you could be a Nazir for 29 days, and not be enough Kamina between them. According to Rav Matna, anything less than 30 days is not a Nizirut, and if you take a Nizirut for less than that, we force you to wait 30 days, because there's no such thing as a Nizirut less than 30 days. So if you say I'm a Nazir for 29 days, you're going to be a Nazir for 30 days. According to Bar Poda, where 29 days is a feasible Nizirut, if you take a net Nizirut for 29 days, you'll be a Nazir for 29 days, because there you specify the days, and then it won't conflate with the Stam Nizirut, and you won't have to worry about it. So that's another nafkamina between these two shitot. Vatznan, already Nazir Shloshim Yom. Don't we have a Mishnah? A person accepts on a neder Nizirut of 30 days in Gileach Yom Lamed Lo Yotza. That if he cuts his hair on the 30th day, he's not Yotzei. So the way that the Bali Tosafot view the question over here is that, according to Bar Poda, this is explainable. Because Bar Poda doesn't hold a Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo, and therefore if he articulates 30 days, that means that he means 30 days, full days, and that's why he can't shave on the 30th day. He has to wait till the 31st day. But according to the answer that you just gave, according to Rav Matna, that Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo, when he specifies 30 days, why is he not Yotzei when he cuts his hair on the 30th day? Same Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo. And since Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo, even if he did on the 30th day b'diavad, he should have been Yotzei. To that, the Gemara says, Ve'omer Shlemim. That's a case here where he specifies the 30 days. That even according to Rav Matna, who says Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo, that's only a person who takes a Stam Nizirut. But in an instance where the person specifies the duration, the fact that he was excessive in explaining 30 days, because all he had to do was say Stam Nazir, because they are any Nazir, he would end up with 30 days anyway. The fact that he specified 30 days shows you that he's trying to accomplish something more than what a normal Stam Nazirut would be. And that means that he would have to keep the full 30 days and not invoke the principle of Mitzvot Hayom Kekulo that you would invoke by a Stam Nizirut. Whereas the Rosh explains over here, it's not that he said Shloshim Yom and we deem it as if he said Shlemim like the Bali Tosafot. Rather, Mishani Be'omer Shlemim. Shemar b'feirush, he says it explicitly, are any nazir shloshim yom shleimim. Because he invoked the word shleimim, he can't then say mikseta yom kikulo, and that's the case. Not that it's as if he said shleimim, but literally he did say the word shleimim, and that's what compels him to keep the full 30 days. And then he brings the alternate girsa, which we find in Tosfot, v'itzfarim degarsi, nasek yomer shleimim. The Mefaresh does bring an alternate girsa down over here, but it explains the whole Gemara in this fashion, which is, nasek yomer shleimim, means that the ratio of that Mishnah is a case where he says, I'm a nazir v'shloshim yom. In that case, Bar Pother agrees he wouldn't bring his korbanot until the 31st day. And that's why, in that case, it wasn't a stam nizirut, but it was actually a case where he said, Areni nazir shloshim yom, and not nasik omer shlemim, but rather, literally, he said shloshim yom, and in saying shloshim yom, that's why he has to wait until the 31st day. And what we would infer from that is that in a case of stam nizirut, if he shaved on the 30th day, then it would be totally fine. That would be the safe of the Mishnah. And this last piece of the Mishnah that we quote, Areni nazir shloshim yom, imgleach yom lavet lo yotza, is parallel with that first case in the Mishnah, because when you take it shloshim yom, it will not work to do it the day earlier, versus the case where it is stam nizirut, that it would work the day earlier. And in that way, there's a complete explanation of the Mishnah according to Bar Podo. Then rather than saying nasek miyom er shloshim, it's rather he did say shloshim yom or shleimim. He said the full 30 days. And that's the explanation of those first three cases in the Mishnah on Ted Zayin Amurav, according to Bar Podo, is a case where he's explicit about it being 30 days, implying that if it wasn't explicit, that's when there's the option to do it on the 30th day. And in that girsa, then there is no institution de rabbanon of the extra day, according to Bar Podo. And then obviously there would be the nafkaminot, all the nafkaminot would exist between Bar Podo and Rav Matna, because Bar Podo believes that stam nizirut remains 29 days, and there is no extra day mid de rabbanan. The Gemara now is going to continue to ask from other Mishnayot and bring similar answers that we see here, as well as discuss this topic of Mikzat Yom Kukulo more extensively. So we're going to stop over here, three lines from the bottom of Hey Amud Bet.